Art Schilling Show continues here on a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. We welcome David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com. My goodness, we've got lots to talk about today. There's tons of money that's being given out, appropriated by the government, and there's always a question amongst conservative people, libertarians, others, objectivists, about whether or not it's a good idea to take the money. And we're going to get into that subject today. 977-1070 is the phone number. David, welcome back to The Schilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so there's a really excellent piece that was put up by Megan Russell at your website, muratahonmoney.com. Should the welfare hypocrisy critique keep me from my tax credit? So let's just start out. What is the critique that people are hearing?
Yeah, so in response to the tax credit, there was a political cartoon called The Welfare Hypocrite. It depicted a pickup truck at a bank teller, and the truck's littered with bumper stickers that say things like, more freedom, less government, no bailouts, get the government off the back. And in the front seat is a stereotypical redneck with a large gun, and the mail driver is saying, we'd like to cash our $1,000 government checks, and handing a piece of paper to the reflective, teller window. And images like that have sort of gone viral on social media, talking about the hypocrisy of libertarians, getting their checks and taking welfare handouts. So that's where the critique comes from. And it's simply not the case that libertarians should feel any hesitation to take checks like that. First of all, it's the rules, and the rules are the rules. So, I don't agree with most of the rules that compromise the tax code. Why do homeowners with loans get deduction when renters don't? Mm-hmm. Why are business profits taxed twice, once as profit and once when they're, dividends or capital gains? Why does the tax code penalize those who create wealth? And why do some industries get special treatment? But when government offers a tax rebate, subsidy, credit, deduction, or other beneficial treatment, just following the rules determine what tax is owed or what you get as benefits.
It's true, and they're there right now, and following the rules, I mean, you'd almost have to be very short-sighted to put your head in the sand. As much as we don't like it, I remember an attorney friend of mine here in town who was adamant about trying to reduce, the problems that we have with lawsuits and tort reform and so forth. And most of the attorneys couldn't stand him because they didn't like him speaking out like that. But he's like, this is a problem. I don't care what industry I'm in. And I saw the same sort of attitude for people who would, for example, support a flat tax and they were CPAs or accountants. And other people were like, oh, you'd be killing our industry. They're realizing that, this is just what the rules are now. We can make them better. And I think in this instance, a lot of people would rather that the money wasn't handed out, but that doesn't mean that they haven't paid into the system.
Right. And, in one sense, it's just a return of money. So the fact that they confiscated it from you in the first place doesn't mean you shouldn't get your share when they give it back.
We're talking with David Murata. 977-1070 is the phone number. The first topic here that we're broaching is, should the welfare hypocrisy critique keep me from my tax credit? So what is the tax credit that's being offered? And interestingly, I haven't really heard it being called a tax credit before. I've heard it being called a rebate check. Are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, we're talking about the money that's given back to each of us on our taxes. It is a tax credit, mm-hmm. meaning that you actually don't even have to have paid into the system to get it. You just get it back out again. And you don't get it if your income is too much. Interestingly, you're not going to get it automatically if you didn't pay 2018 taxes, because it's all based on 2018. Or if you didn't file a tax return, or if you're too poor, or there's a lot of reasons why you might not get it. And if your income is too high, or you didn't file a tax return, you can go to the IRS website and fill out a little stub, and that will make sure that you're on the list to get it. So, there's a lot of intricacies in these laws, and interestingly enough, they're actually sending out the tax rebates in order of who they think needs them the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll take, maybe 20 weeks to get that done as they're just gradually sending them out. So you'll either get it or you won't, in the next 20 weeks. If you're married to someone without a Social Security number, you don't get it. I don't know why that is, but they just said, hey, if you're married to someone who doesn't have a Social Security number, you don't get it. So that's another interesting sort of anomaly in the system.
Yeah. David, you mentioned about not paying taxes in 2018. Is that differentiated from not filing? In other words, if you filed but didn't pay taxes?
Or... if you filed but didn't pay taxes, then you'll get it. But if you failed to file, then you won't get it. And a lot of people fail to file because they just don't earn enough. They just don't make enough to file. So some of our very poorest members are not going to get it.
And there's nothing they can do about that?
No, there is. They can go to the IRS website, there's a special URL, and they can do that. Or they can go back and file their 2018 taxes, or they can file their 2019 taxes, or they can just take it as a credit on their 2020 taxes. All of those are legitimate ways to get on the list.
So there was, I went over to that website and it was kind of interesting. I didn't like inputting my Social Security number into even a government website, but I did on several occasions, and they could never find me, and then they finally were able to track me down. But what they said was, we don't have your banking information, and if you want your money, give us your banking information, and I'm loath to give my banking info to the IRS. I just don't want the federal government with their paws in my bank account. And so I didn't do it, and then it said something like, well, you might get a check later on. It wasn't very reassuring.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people are not getting their refund because of the way that the tax system works, meaning that for people who don't owe anything, when they go to fill out their taxes, the person filling out their taxes need some way of being able to charge them for it, and they charge them based on their refund. And the refund can't go to the person who filled out their taxes. It has to go into a separate account. So now they have this bank account that's a separate account, which is giving the tax preparer their fee and giving the recipient the rest. And these received a whole bunch of checks, and they just returned them and said, we're not going to do this. We're not going to be the IRS's delivery system for free. So they just returned them all. So a lot of people who fill out their taxes by giving it to someone else, and then they're going to charge a fee for it, and then it comes back in a different tax account, are also going to have trouble receiving their taxes.
David, we've got about a minute left, and I want to ask this question. I'm not sure that there's an answer to it, but I wonder if anyone's ever calculated the overhead and the distribution costs of this money, because all the things that we're talking about right now, I would imagine that it is tremendously expensive to try to administer all of this.
It is, and to use their tax collection system as a vehicle for distributing money has proven very troublesome to the IRS. A lot of the people who you would have expected would have needed the money the most are not getting it, and a lot of people who you would have thought, oh, well, they don't really need the money, but I'm going to give it to them anyway, are getting it quickly. I've seen a number of people who receive their check, and they're like giving it to charity or something like that. There's even a lot of appeals by charities, just give us your check or something like that. And that's sort of another issue, is that people who don't deserve the money, who don't, I want to be very careful on this. It would have been better had they just given a check to everyone and said, we don't care. But the fact they put an income limit on it made some people feel like, well, I don't really deserve this check. And when they feel like they don't deserve the check, then they're liable to give it away. And that's another issue, is the two-pocket theory of money.
All right. We're going to go to that on the other side, because I think it's very important. Also, we'll go to Ayn Rand, who I enjoy talking about on this program. When we return on the other side with David Murata of Murata Wealth Management, 434-977-1070. Are you being a hypocrite if you keep your tax credit? Stay with us. We'll continue with David and the Shilling Show right after news and weather. All right, Shilling Show continues here on a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking with David Murata, Murata Wealth Management, on welfare hypocrisy claims, stimulus checks, and so forth. We have an email coming in from Ken, not Ken the Democrat. He'd like to get some clarification from Mr. Murata. He says, my 2018 tax return, I owed several thousand dollars due to capital gains. I paid that money. Am I not eligible for the stimulus money? I just filed my 2019 tax return and do have a small refund. So is he good to go?
Yeah, I mean, the details of all of the return I don't know them all.
Okay.
So I think he may be okay.
Yeah.
Time will tell, and he'll be able to do it on his 2020 tax return.
I want to go to Ayn Rand, if we could, please. And there was a couple of very interesting quotes that Megan put into this article here. And people would think Ayn Rand, the objectivist, would say, you know, I'm not on board with any of this. But what were her thoughts on situations like this?
Yeah, after her death, some people went back and addressed the question of her taking Social Security, which seems like a hypocrisy of the whole thing. And she said, first of all, it's a return of property. That's the right way of saying it. The victims don't have to add to the self-inflicted martyrdom of the injury done to them by others. You know, they do not have to let the looters profit doubly by letting them distribute the money exclusively to the parasites who clamored for it. You know, whenever the welfare state offers them some small restitution, the victim should take it. she said basically it is immoral for people to have taken it in the first place. And one of the difficulties with the welfare state is that it puts you in a no-win situation. And the government is responsible for this in the first place. You know, so it's a hard problem, and there's many situations so ambiguous and so complex that no one can determine what the right course of action is. That is one of the evils of the welfare state. It's fundamentally irrational and immoral, and it forces men into contradictions where no course of action is right. So that was her critique on the whole thing is that it's just a return of principle, and the government is responsible for it in the first place, and basically you should take everything that you can. She did say that you should not be bribed by it, though. So that's an interesting thought, is that you should simply take it and not be bribed by it, and be very clear in opposing the welfare state while you're taking all the money that you can.
That's a fascinating point, and I think it's really important because a lot of this money is handed out as political bribes. You know, they're looking for votes, they're looking for support, you know, and we see this time and time again and call it out. So for people to understand that and go, you know, even though I'm getting some restitution here for the thievery of government, I should not come to rely on that, and I should continue to oppose it.
Right. Yep.
There was something else I wanted to get to, which is this whole issue of money being money. And you mentioned the two-pocket point of view before the break, except for the motions and how we look at it. Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, $1 is just the same as another dollar. But curiously, our emotions don't perceive the world this way. We're often tempted to treat different sections of our money differently. You know, money can be, you can be earned money, found money, money gifted. There's retirement money, emergency money, fund money. There's money for our future house, money from your inheritance, and money for lunch. And you see people falling into this two-pocket theory of money, where the source of the money seems to, in some way, influence what they ought to do with it. Whereas if you pool all of your money together, now you've got a different theory of money. All of your money should be held to a high calling that has nothing to do with welfare laws, the government, your employment, your inheritance. And Christians really, I think, should lean into this. Christians talk about their wealth in terms of stewardship, simply to remind us that everyone's assets have a higher purpose. God owns everything. We're like agents under God's power of attorney, called to act wisely. You know, we're all given that kind of control over things.
So if we look at it like that, you know, what is the difference that makes in people's lives? I mean, it may be obvious to some, but for others who don't practice that or never thought about it, how does that change the equation?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people who, you know, they're getting their check in the mail, and they're thinking, gosh, you know, I don't deserve this check, or I don't need this check. Maybe I should give this check to charity. Maybe I should give this check to the people who I was, you know, it was intended for, wasn't really intended for me. You know, this may be the first time they're getting money that wasn't intended for them, mm-hmm. or at least in their minds they are. Whereas a lot of us look at it and say, you know, what, we were taxed when we shouldn't have been taxed, and we were, you know, there's a lot of other things like that. And the money flow back and forth is just government giving and taking from some and back and forth. The fact that money is money means when you get this money, you should mix it into your assets. You should probably just save it. You should probably not spend any of it. You should probably not give it to charity. I mean, mm-hmm. some people are saying we should give it to the poor when last year the poor were the poor and they didn't give it to the poor last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so why do you give it to the poor now? Now is a moment where if you're collecting unemployment and you have a very low income, you're actually collecting more in unemployment than you are not working, than you are if you were working.
I want to get to that on the other side of the break because I want us to take some time on that. I think it's an important topic. David Morata, before we do go to the break, I just want to go to one more thing about how the government gives this, maybe not this money, but gives some money out to people. And I think the state government is often offering people like some sort of a prepaid Visa card, which I think is an awful idea and it's an insult. And I wanted to ask you about the ways in which the government gives money back to you, which you have coming, which belongs to you.
Yeah, it's always best not to accept it as something like a prepaid Visa card. That's kind of hard to get into an investment account mm-hmm. or to save or anything else like that. You should simply take the money that you've got and throw it in the bank. And, you know, banking is another issue. Some people don't have bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people who are being given prepaid Visa cards because they actually just don't even have a bank account. Here's an opportunity, open a bank account. So here, you know, here, get it in cash and open a bank account. You know, I want to say I'm not against charity, but
right.
last year the needs were just as big as they mm-hmm. are this year. So if you didn't give to charity last year from your assets, why are you giving it this year? Is it simply because you got a windfall? Government is counting on windfalls being spent. And they really shouldn't. People tighten up at a time like this, and they should. They should just put that in the bank and not worry about it.
There was a time when saving was encouraged by what I would call reasonable interest rates, and it wasn't all that long ago that if you had a money market account or something like that, maybe you had $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, you could be earning 4% or 5%, and that started to add up pretty quickly. These days, we were briefly flirting with negative interest rates. I think they've backed away from that, but a lot of people just go, what's the point?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is inflation is a tax on people who keep their money in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And if people think that the stock market is a risky thing, what is the stock market? It's down, you know, 10 to 15% right now. If people think that the stock market is a risky thing, money kept in cash will lose 75% of its value over 30 years.
Wow.
So it's, you know, inflation is a dangerous thing, and we need to invest in things that will keep up with inflation at least, if not beat it.
It's funny you say that. I'm watching a lot of these old TV shows with my kids, and they always ask me, you know, when they say something cost a nickel, like, you know, they went to the store and Little House on the Prairie and paid a penny for, you know, just a ton of candy. Like, how much would that be right now? You know, they're very curious about this because they don't really understand the concept of inflation and how governments have manipulated the value of money.
Yeah, my grandmother in her day talked about, you know, $4 for a week's worth of groceries. And if she lost a dollar, that was the worst dollar she'd ever lost.
Indeed. All right, we got one more segment ahead with David Morata. When we get back on the other side, I do want to talk about the unemployment insurance relief that's being offered and people getting paid more money to not work than to work. But first, a quick word from my friends at Newsmax TV. Hey, did you notice that the virus is attacking more than people? It's also being used to attack many Christians. The Constitution guarantees freedom of religion, But now officials across the country are saying you can't go to church. Well, each night this week, watch Greg Kelly Reports on Newsmax TV at 7 p.m. Eastern. Greg Kelly is on Newsmax TV, America's new cable news channel. And now Greg Kelly is exposing how cities across the country are abusing their power, going after Catholic and evangelical churches. Even President Trump says it's a serious problem. Now Newsmax TV and Greg Kelly reveal the real agenda of those who want to close our churches. Greg Kelly also speaks with David Horowitz, the famous Jewish author whose new book, Dark Agenda, has become a runaway bestseller. Horowitz's Dark Agenda exposes the war on Christianity, and he's on Newsmax with Greg Kelly tonight. So find Newsmax TV on DirecTV 349, Dish 216, Xfinity 1115, Spectrum Fios 615, Cox and more. Check your channel guide and tune in at 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. The Shilling Show returns with David Morata and our final segment right after this. All right, heading into the final segment of the Shilling Show for today, David Morata joins us from Morata Wealth Management, online at moratonmoney.com. All right, let's talk about unemployment insurance relief that's being offered. And so this is like totally unheard of what they came up with this time. Would you explain what the benefit is that's being offered presently?
Yeah, the Congress approved payouts of $600 more per week. So you get your weekly salary plus $600, or you get a fraction of your weekly salary plus $600. The $600 is added to unemployment benefits provided by states, and the $600 bump means collecting unemployment potentially is more lucrative than earning a paycheck for low-income earners. Mm-hmm. It can be as much as twice as high, which is certainly a boon to those receiving it. And this is another case where some people are reluctant to file for unemployment benefits because they feel like they don't need it, even though they've been laid off. And this is a case where if you've been laid off, go apply for your unemployment benefits.
All right. So we're paying people more to not work than to work in many instances. That's not a good thing, either in the short term or the long term, really. But let's talk about both the short and long term effects of that policy.
Yeah, well, in the short term, it means for the next 13 weeks, people may not work. A lot of people are working anyway, even though they could make more money unemployed. And it means they'll be more reluctant to take their job back when they get hired. There have been a lot of restaurants where they started to stay open, and then they said, you know what, we're all going to make more money if we're all laid off, so let's just get laid off for 13 weeks. So that's going to be, for people who get, who got laid off. In one sense, the government started this and the government's responsible. Mm-hmm. We're going to be arguing about the idea of shutting down the economy for years to come. And it tends to split on liberal-conservative lines, because liberals feel like we live in a utopia where no one needs to die, and conservatives feel like, well, no, we live in a tragic fallen world where you're going to die anyway. And that split, it's not political lines. It has nothing to do with who's in office. It has to do with just the way we see the world, and we see the world very differently. So, while a conservative would have said, we should all be really careful, and we shouldn't go out. But there's no reason why a lawn care service shouldn't continue to care for my lawn, or if a church can figure out a way to keep everyone separate, they should do that, or things like that. If we should just be overly careful, that would have been the conservatives' point of view. And the liberals' point of view is, one death is one too many, and we should shut down the economy because one death is one too many, and we should be really cautious on that. And it's a virulent strain, and we should be very careful. And I'm not a virologist, so I don't really want to weigh in on that. But I do want to say that we see the issue in very, very different circumstances.
Yeah, it's interesting. One death is one death too many, unless you're talking about abortion. And many of the same people think there's too many people on the earth already and that we're overpopulated. And there's been all sorts of policies like the discontinuance of the use of DDT by many of these very same people, or at least the same ideology, that resulted in untold number of deaths.
Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap this up, David. Let's talk about the Paycheck Protection Program and some of the benefits, again, available to employers.
Yeah, and this was a bill aimed at employers, and it basically said the bill, first of all, provided a bunch of money to their loans, and their loans have a very low interest rate on them, so there's not a lot of issue in taking them, and they can be forgiven by the government if at least 75% of the money goes keeping employees on the payroll, you know, basically amounting to these grants for businesses. So they kind of hit it from two points of view. For low-income workers, they said, you know, we've got this unemployment and you should be laid off. And for other workers, they said, you know what, we've got this other thing and we're going to give it to your employer for keeping you employed. The Paycheck Protection Program ran out of money and then it was re-upped with another chunk of money. And you know, it's this interesting thing. It says you have to have been seriously affected by the virus, but they don't define what seriously affected is. Mm-hmm. And then they say you need to, it can be forgiven if you, and then it's another very vague, you know, it's like another seriously affected by the virus. And that sort of produced a little bit of quandaries. You know, I don't think I qualify, but I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know that I qualify, but I don't think I do. And so it's you know, it's dependent upon whether or not you want to take the money. So you know, our industry was hit, but it wasn't hit that seriously. We're also under the, you know, if we accept money from a bank and then don't pay it back, we have all kinds of financial things that we need to file for that. For me, it just wasn't worth it, and it did, and I didn't seem to qualify anyway. But my accountant said, you know, maybe you should do that, and I pointed out what I had found, and she said, oh, maybe you shouldn't. So, you know, so who knows on an accountant like that? And that sort of goes into all of this. Mm-hmm. But I would say that if you, you know, if you had any of those, that you should get that money. And you should, you know, go to your bank and say, I want some of that money too. It's all very complex, and that's the difficulty with all of these rules is it's difficult to understand whether or not you qualify, and it's difficult sometimes to know whether or not you you should apply. And you know, that's just sort of another issue associated with all of this.
And to be continued, because this is a subject that's not going away anytime soon. David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. And David, it's always great to have you here on The Shilling Show. Thanks for joining us today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we'll do it again next month. And that's going to wrap up today's edition of The Shilling Show.